streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What about when your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Round four recap for this week's Farmers Insurance Open. Joining me to break it all down, Greg Ducharme is here. Hello, Greg.
What's going on, boys? What a week. Really, and a unique addition here. Saturday night, final round recap. Pretty cool stuff.
Kyle Porter is here. KP, hello, sir.
What an ending to an event. It was fun. A lot of big names in it. Great winner. We got a lot to discuss.
Yeah, absolutely stacked leaderboard. And spoiler alert, if you don't want to know who won the Farmers, I'm going to give you like five more seconds.
Rick's struggling over there, Greg.
Yeah, I guess it might be a little more than 5 seconds. He did say before the show started, there are some internet problems at the hotel. I think that hotel is pretty jamming being out there
around
at the
Farmers. 66.
You cut out for that whole thing,
I
Rick.
I knew that. I knew it was screwed up too. The internet here is so bad. I knew that wasn't working.
Yeah, we heard 66.
It was a final round 66, Greg. Tell me what you saw from Max Homa today.
Oh, man. Well, obviously so much good stuff. But the cool thing to me about Max Homa is, well, one of the many cool things when it comes to his golf game is how it's changed over the years and continues to change. I mean, when he first came out on tour, or even when he first won, I mean, this was not one of the best golf swings on the PGA Tour by any means. It was a short game that was really weak. It was a putter that was really poor. And all of a sudden, all of those things are strengths. I mean, he has one of the best swings on the PGA Tour. It could be your favorite to watch. It's one of mine. I mean, it might be top three. I mean, it might be number one. I mean, that may be a little recency bias. It might be recency bias.
Wait, give me your top three.
Well, I definitely have Max Homa in there. I would definitely have Adam Scott in there. Who else am I putting in there?
JT.
JT, I really like JT's swing. I love the upright nature of it. Xander
it's so good.
Xander's up there. Xander's probably ahead of JT for me.
Oh, come on. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of my favorites out there.
What about Rory?
Rory is definitely top three. I don't know if Xander's top three, and I don't know if Homa is. No. And I like Cantlay's too. No.
He's gonna name every top 10
top
player.
Three favorite, top three favorite player.
Morikawa.
I really like it, but it's really effective.
Greg,
it's
hold on. Greg on every swing. I love it. It's a great swing. It might be top three. There's
no.
Like 10 guys.
Xander's not top three. Rory's top three. Rory's top three. I think Homa's top three. And I think Xander's in my top three.
That swing, KP, was good enough to make birdie on three of the four par threes on Sunday, including both of them on the back, numbers 11 and 16. It was one of the few birdies that we had on 16 a long to really put the juice on Sam Ryder.
Yeah, I mean, he got up and down from 213 on 11. He got up and down from 230 on 16. And it's those two holes are extraordinary, but to do it in the mix on the back nine at a place like Torrey is remarkable. And you know, I think it speaks to the fact that he, when he's in contention, he just goes for it. And you see that in sort of the way the numbers have played out. He's been, I put this out there, he's been in the top five going into the final round of a PGA Tour event only 9 times, which is like, I mean, that's a good number, but it's not, I mean, Tiger's number is probably 150. I'm just making that up, but actually I can get it for you if you want. But he's converted 6 of those. He has 6 wins out of the 9 times that he's entered the top or entered the final round in the top 5. And I think, you know, you're not going to win all those. That number will probably not end up at 66% when his career is over, because it's impossible to win that much. And he said it after his round, you need a lot of luck. But I just think him going after pins like that, going at, like, not being afraid to just go for it is, it sounds reductive, but that's half the battle, you know? And he's willing to put himself out there, and if he doesn't win, then he's fine with it and moves on. But that's a, I think that's a rarer, it's a more rare trait than people would expect from top level tour pros.
I just to follow up on that, as Rick looks like he's frozen again. To me, when I see Homa hitting those shots, I think there's a nature of aggression that's mixed with an ability to be really humble about it. And like, you don't hear Max Homa saying things after rounds the way we heard Rahm, you know, discussing his round, the way we heard Spieth discussing his performance. And players are asked that. So I'm not saying that those guys did anything wrong, but you hear a lot of guys say that they're playing really well, they're feeling really good about things. And Homa seems to have this understanding that is, that the game is really fickle. And Kyle, you sent out that tweet about the one quote where you're one swing thought away from, you know, being good again. It's a great quote, but that also seems to come with an understanding that you're kind of a swing thought away or a swing away from not being very good. And he's been there and he knows what that's like. And so he seems to me to be so appreciative of the fact that he's in control of his game. And when he is in control of his game, he's not going to wait until next time, because he knows how rare this occurrence is, even though for him it's becoming less and less rare.
Yeah, so a couple of things here. One, I just looked up the numbers. Tiger has entered the final round. This is since 2004, so the strokes gained era. He's entered the final round of an event inside the top five 79 times since 2004, which is a lot. Max's is 9 on the PGA Tour. I think it's more like 11 or 12 if you count Korn Ferry. Rory has entered the final round of an event in the top five 104 times in the strokes gained era, which is, I mean, it just goes to show you, like, you know, it's to win at a really high, like, to win a lot of events, you have to give yourself a lot of chances. And Max has actually not given himself a ton of chances relative to guys like Rory, but he's won a lot. And I think that's it's kind of a crazy thing. I mean, you look at the last, since the start of 2021, Greg, Rory and Max are tied with 5 PGA Tour victories, not including the Zurich. So I threw the Zurich out. Right. I think Cantlay also has 5, but it's Rory and Max Homa with 5 PGA Tour wins. And I'm curious, I was thinking about this. Who are the guys, throw out the world rankings, throw out the Data Golf rankings, throw out everything, just are there how many guys do you think are better than Max Homa in the world right now?
Oh man, he kind of makes that question really difficult, because when you analyze his game, you think, well Tony Finau has more firepower than Max Homa just simply because he's longer. Xander has more firepower than Max Homa, or so we think. Rory, Rahm, Scheffler, JT, Spieth, these guys that have accomplished these things before and contended in majors, we would put ahead of Max Homa. But as he continues to win, Like, where does that, where does the contention and the winning kind of match up? Like, is the winning percentage more important, or is the number of times in contention more important? Cause you know, I think Tony Finau is a really good comparison.
It's a good point. Yeah.
Cause he's always there, and it feels like, and it started to happen. It feels like those numbers, those averages that you were talking about are going to turn in Finau's favor. Are they going to turn away from Homa's favor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that question's out there.
That's really interesting. Do you really think Spieth is better than Max Homa right now?
No. No, I don't. I don't think JT is better than Spieth right now. I know he
then Homa, you mean?
Term he is. Yeah, then Homa. Exactly. You know, with Justin Thomas, I worry about what he's got going on the greens with the flat stick. I have worries about a lot of these top guys. I have worries about Scottie Scheffler with the putter. I mean, how would you compare Scottie Scheffler and Max Homa? He'd probably give the edge to Scottie. He contends every week, it seems.
Yeah, I think so. I think the interesting point about this is just that we're talking about Homa in an echelon of players that, you know, I think for so long he was two things. One, he was like the funny guy on social media, which is just such a tired trope to me that doesn't even, he is great on social. He was great when he was mic'd up on Friday in the third round.
Yeah.
But he was also the guy that sort of really struggled at the beginning of his career. He became this sort of poster boy for, he was almost like a young journeyman in that he struggled. Then he kind of like made it onto the tour. And now he's one of the 10 best players in the world. And I think sometimes public perception lags behind reality, right? So it's like, that's been a reality, I would say, for, I don't know, would we say 6, 8 months, a year, something like that? I think Homa has been one of the top 10, 15 players in the world. And I don't know that public perception has my dad's perception. I don't know if it's caught up with that. Now, if he goes out and wins the Masters, it will. If he goes out and wins the US Open at LACC, it will. But I mean, it's a big time win. Some of Homa's wins are, you know, the Fortnite, whatever that tournament is called, was that's a good win, but it's not, yeah, it's not the Farmers over Finau and Rahm and Jason Day and all these guys. And I was just, I'm really impressed with the career that he's built. It's not like he got to 30 in the world and kind of just plateaued. It's not like he got to 20 in the world and plateaued. Max Homa by the end of the year could be a top five player in the world. What do you think is, what's Max Homa's ceiling?
Well, we got to see what he can do in majors. And that's the next step for him. And what I find to be so curious about Max Homa, or so fascinating, is how he really has developed. Like you said, he goes from this journeyman tour player, and he really is. His first year playing a full schedule on tour, he made $380,000. He missed 15 cuts. Then the next year, he plays 17 events. He makes two cuts. Misses 15. He makes $18,000 on the PGA Tour in 16 and 17. And then in 19, the very next year, he wins. And that kind of solidifies his position on tour. And he starts to just build a little bit more every single year. He goes from two top tens to four top tens to five top tens to five top tens. He's got two so far this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if that number exceeds five. Along the way, he has that President's Cup last year where he went 4-0. That's a really big step, making the team and being a key component on a national cup team like that. That's another statement that he is one of those top 10 players in the world, like you talked about. So the majors are lagging behind. And I think that's a huge factor in what his ceiling is. But do you think he can win one?
A major?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Of course. If you're winning Wells Fargo's and Torrey's, you can absolutely win a major championship. Now, David here says Max's ceiling is 2 to 3 majors. That's a lot. I mean, that's, you know, that's a Spieth number. That's a, I mean, JT's got two. I would say 1-2. I mean, listen, and this is why the majors are so beautiful. If you win two in this era, that is a lot of major championships.
Yeah.
Because it means usually, not always, but a lot, most of the time, it means you've put yourself in the mix for like 5 or 6 or 7 of them, right? Which is a ton if you're kind of mixing it up and you're in it on Sunday. There's right. there's so many guys that can happen to. So 2-3, 3 would be, I would be surprised if Max Homa won 3 major championships. I wouldn't be surprised if he won 1 and maybe 2. So I don't know. I've got 2 more things on Homa before we kind of move on to some other stuff. I guess the first thing, and they were talking about this on the broadcast, Greg, and I'd be interested in your opinion on it. I think it was Trevor Immelman was talking about how Homa just doesn't have a lot of holes in his game. I'm curious about, from your perspective, you talked about his swing. He's really good with driver. His short game is tremendous. What part of his game are you most impressed by?
The short game, I would say. Well, I'm impressed with the short game the most because of its improvement. You look at his around the green stuff, and it was really bad for a while. And I thought it was something. I mean, in 2021, he's 157th on tour around the green. And every year before that, he's outside the top 150. I mean, 175th at times. And now all of a sudden he's 42nd this year. But what has happened since he won the Wells Fargo last year, when you look at what he's done around the greens, it's like a complete switch. The switch has really flipped, and he's been a really good gainer in that area. So I'm really excited about that for him. And I think it's a absolute strength of his game. The putting is another thing that has gone from do you remember these conversations we used to have where Max Homa would gain strokes putting and win? It was like if he had a week where he gained more than 2 strokes putting, he would win. And that has really shifted. And it shifted to he putts really well quite often. So I think those two areas have completed his game. But I mean, you look at some of the shots, when you watch him play without looking at history, the most impressive thing about his game is his ability to trust his shot shape, which you see at 16, right? Left hole location.
God, what a shot.
And then the tee shot at 17, right? I mean, it's an early tee pickup. He starts it over the gorge and he knows it's cutting back. And there are examples of that all day long. But it makes it really hard to hide a hole location when you're willing to start it off the green the way he does, and fade it back in. He doesn't have to work it both ways. He can go hit his fade anywhere, and that's a good thing.
Well, 17 and 18 tee shots set up perfectly for him. The shot into 16 was, I mean, the line that he took, Colt Knows said this on the broadcast, but he was like, that's an aggressive line. And it was. I mean, he started it out right at that sort of off the right side of that tree and just worked it back and made the putt. That's a 2 that you shouldn't be making that in a Monday practice round, much less on the 70th hole of the golf tournament. So to your point though, each of the last, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons, he's improved his overall strokes gain total. 2017, Greg, he was negative 2.72. And then he's negative 0.9, positive 0.1, positive 0.6, positive 0.65. Then last year he jumps all the way to positive 1.46, which is if you're not familiar with strokes gain, that's a really good number. If you're 2 plus, you're a top 5 player in the world. He's at 1.7 so far for this season. That's only 5 events. That'll jump to probably around 2 after winning Torrey. And he's been plus in every single category each of these last 2 seasons. So really impressive stuff from Max. Last thing I've got on him, Greg, is just this idea. And I don't know. I was thinking about this because we see such a schism between like the LIV guys and the PGA Tour guys. And there's this sort of narrative building, I think, among the PGA Tour guys where a lot of the guys that are really successful on the PGA Tour are also the guys that are the most open or willing to talk and willing to give you information, willing to be vulnerable, willing to do all of those things. We see this with Max on 13 on Friday in round three, when he puts the earpiece in, he's talking on the broadcast. The players just don't do that. And he's willing to do it because he understands sort of the entertainment value of professional golf and of the PGA Tour. I think the thing that I was thinking about this, and I'm curious about your opinion, is it seems like you could make a case that the four or five best players in the world right now are also the best and most the best talkers and the most open players in the world. You talk about Rory, Rom, Homa. I'm trying to think of JT, like all those guys are really interesting talkers. And that just doesn't seem to happen very often in professional sports.
And they have different perspectives too, which is really cool. I mean, while Rom is open, he's very different from Rory. And Rom is a little more controversial, I would say. Not that he's controversial. He will speak his mind, and it's a little more aggressive, where Rory and Homa probably are, you know, on the night, they seem to be a little nicer. They would be guys more willing to put on a AirPod and play a hole with the broadcast team. But I am very curious to see how that goes moving forward. Like, will these top guys who are very open, I mean, Jordan Spieth could do that. What's the difference? Right. Jordan Spieth does it anyway. It's just that you add another, add another voice in there. Right. So I could definitely see something like that happening. And I think it's good, but I will point out one thing. This popped into my mind on the broadcast. When you open up that line of communication, you got to be careful as the broadcaster not to give a piece of information you shouldn't. Makes it an advantage, right? If they're talking and Max is looking over his shot there, and there's a moment of downtime, and somebody says, oh yeah, well, you don't want to go past this flag, nobody has kept it on the green from back there, it may create a little bit of a problem. So I just think they have to be a little cautious with that.
It's a good point. I think they did a good job, and I think the point of it is to just ask. And I think this is what a lot of people want. It's what I want, is to ask, hey, what are you trying to do here? You know, you watch, I watched the JT and Spieth No Lane Up video where they play with them at Kapalua, and it's not a tournament, obviously, but they're playing the same course that a tournament was played on. And it's like, hey, you've got 35 yards on this pitch. Where are you trying to land it? How are you trying to land it? Because those guys are so good. And I would put Homa in this category. They're so good at just talking, for lack of a better term, very nerdily about golf, right? Which is what we love. Like, I love hearing that stuff. I think you love hearing that stuff. And I think
absolutely
those of us that are really into golf love hearing about trying to hit a 3-yard cut and hold it off and the wind's moving this way. And that's fascinating. It makes the entire, it almost reshapes, I think, the entire product and makes it more entertaining and fun. So let's just work our way down the leaderboard a bit.
Yeah, I like it.
I want to start with Rom. He dropped a T7, just a not very good Sunday. He had two great days in a row, gained 6 strokes on Thursday, gained 6 strokes on Friday, playing the North and the South respectively. It kind of just fell apart with him when he had to save a double there on, what was that, 5, I think?
5.
Yeah. Any takeaways from Sunday, or just kind of inevitable that he wouldn't shoot 65 every single round this year?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess we learned that he's human, right? And you saw some things kind of get a little frustrating for him. You saw some tee shots get offline a little bit. And this was a time I thought he lost some of that golf swing that he had the last 2 days, even though his numbers were really good tee to green. I thought it was a little looser tee to green than it had been. And then there's, I mean, the numbers are going to say one thing about a short game, but the situation on 5, I imagine, took a really big hit there. And he left himself in some, I mean, he had to make an 8-footer. Nearly a 9-footer for double bogey at 5. That was a dagger for him. And then when you're pressing on that golf course, it's so hard to force birdies. You cannot play it that way. So I think once he kind of made that double bogey, lost track a little bit, things got a lot more difficult for him.
Yeah. Keegan Bradley finishes second, played a great back nine. He shot 32 on the back, four birdies, kind of made a little bit of a mess of 18. Didn't hit a very good approach shot there, but I want a little mini trivia question here, Greg. Where do you think Keegan Bradley is ranked in the U.S. Ryder Cup rankings right now?
Ooh. Well, he won at the Zozo, which would count. So I would guess Keegan Bradley is ranked right now 13th.
It's a good guess. He's ranked 11th, ahead of Xander, ahead of Patrick Cantlay, ahead of Tony Finau, ahead of Jordan Spieth, ahead of Aaron Wise, ahead of Billy Horschel, ahead of Bryson DeChambeau. That's going to be ahead of Patrick Reed. That's going to be a real, I think, conversation throughout the year. I mean, Keegan's obviously well known for how much he loves the Ryder Cup. He might be one of the few people that loves the Ryder Cup more than I do. And he's playing great golf. I think, you know, there's a lot of things that people enjoy kind of clowning on Keegan for, whether it's the warm-up or the unpacked suitcase from the Ryder Cup or whatever, but he's playing really good golf this season. And I think he's a pretty good character. We don't, you know, there's a lot of guys are on the tour just not dial tones, but just don't have a ton of personality. And he's got some personality, whether you like him or hate him. I think it's fun kind of when he's mixing it up.
I personally love watching Keegan in contention, and I get the gyrations that are a little, you know, they bother people, but that is just pure competitive focus. Juice is flowing. I mean, I've seen Keegan play at Medalist. I saw him play a couple of holes here and there, and it looks completely different, right? It's way easier. The pre-shot routine is easier. I didn't see from this close, but I doubt there's that side eye green reading thing going on. But you see all that because he's so into it. And I love that aspect that this guy just, he is in the ring and he's mixing it up, like you said, and he's bringing it. And I think that's why he would be a really good Ryder Cup player. I know putting is a weakness. He led the field this week, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. I think he did also. Well, I guess they don't have it there, but I think he putted pretty well at the Zozo, which was not measured.
He would have had to.
Yeah. That's how Keegan wins. But come Ryder Cup time, I would expect him to make big putts when he needed to, because of that energy, that the juices are flowing. He's on foreign soil, and I think Keegan would be eating that up and could be really valuable to the team.
Yeah, great week for him. Colin Morikawa finished third, shot 369 on Sunday. He finished at 10 under, so three back of Homa. One back of Keegan. Is this a bounce back for him? Do you think he even needs to bounce back from Kapalua? Where are you at with Morikawa kind of as we head into the sort of elevated, like the meat of the elevated part of the schedule?
Very high on him. Very high on him. I mean, he was third off the tee this week. He was third approaching the green this week. 9.8 strokes gained tee to green, and he lost around the green too. So he was second tee to green for the week. This was really impressive stuff. And it looked like Morikawa of old to me, where he just keep shooting, give yourself opportunities, and eventually you're going to start making some putts. And he did that today. He holds some really nice putts. He hit it to 12, 15 feet a lot and poured it in time and time again. So I was very impressed with him. I was disappointed with the second shot at 17. But other than that, I was really impressed. How about you?
Yeah, he makes a five on 17, sandwiches that with, he had four birdies on the back, but he also had two bogeys. I'm actually relative to a lot of other people bullish on Morikawa. I think a lot of people came into the year thinking Morikawa is not playing very well. And if you look at his numbers last year, pretty freaking good. And he just didn't win, you know? And
yeah.
And so, yes, I'm in on Morikawa. I wonder, the thing I think about with him a lot is, remember when JT was talking about how Tiger told him at the beginning of his career, hey, you don't have enough shots. And yep. then he went down the Pedro Martinez path and he has every shot now, where it's like Pedro can kind of do anything he wanted, or could kind of do anything he wanted with the ball. And that's how I feel about JT when he's got an iron in his hands. I don't feel like that with Morikawa. Yeah, I think he has one or two shots. That's unfair and reductive. I'm sure he has more than that. But when I watch him, it's that stock cut, which, to be fair, is like the best shot of any player in the world. So I'm not coming at him about that. I think get a little worried about that when there's weather or wind, or he needs a kind of a punch draw, or he has like a funky lie. I don't know. I think when it gets to a point where you need a bunch of different shots, I don't worry about him because he's a great player. And I think he can kind of use that stock cut or stock fade to have a ton of success. But I would like it if he had maybe more shots than he does.
It's a fascinating discussion, right? Because this comes from JT, you know, the JT thing comes from Tiger. And I think at times JT, and all the shots he has, it holds him back.
Interesting. Like he overuses it.
Yes. Like he's done it at Augusta National. He doesn't know what to do on 13. Like he makes that hole.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much harder than he has to.
Cause he tries to turn over that draw and like hit that kind of low running hook. And then he yanks it into the creek and
right. or hits it.
Yeah. It's been a little bit of a mess for him.
Yeah. And I think, they get a little too extreme. And while it's great to have them, in order for that to be really effective, you need to be able to pair it with the discipline that Tiger has. And I'm not sure JT is there yet, which I'm not sure anyone ever will get to that point. So again, not a knock on JT, but with Morikawa, when you have a stock shot that you play all the time, it makes decision-making very easy. And it takes out a lot of mental pressure. And I think there's a lot of validity to it. So it's kind of the way he plays is kind of my preference. Because my philosophy, you don't really ever need a low running draw. When you get down to the final three holes, might you need one? Yeah, I suppose. So it's good to know how to hit it. It looks cool, right? Yeah, of course it does.
It's a little bit like Morikawa is a little bit like Mariano Rivera, where he's got one pitch, but it's the best pitch in the game. So you don't really need anything else except... I would argue in Morikawa's case, and again, I keep going back to, I followed him around at Southern Hills last year. It was windy on, I think it was day two, maybe day three, when it was like 40 degrees. But some of the shots he was hitting were just getting matumboed, like just getting batted away. And his sometimes inability to flight the ball gives me pause in... Now, not all these tournaments are played in bad weather or windy conditions or whatever. So I think 85% of the time you can use your Mariano Rivera cutter and it's great. It works perfectly. It's just that other 15%. And a lot of times the major championships are played in those kind of conditions. I will say if LACC is tame conditions, Morikawa is going to be a problem.
I don't know what they've done up in Rochester at Oak Hill either, but I'm sure that golf course is a little bit different now. And I'll look into that a little bit, you know, in the next couple of months. But based on, you know, a Jason Duffner winning there, going head to head with a Jim Furyk, it seems like my recollection is that accuracy and precision iron play is kind of the key at Oak Hill. So Morikawa and Homa, I think, are really good fits there too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's do Sam Ryder real quick, and then we'll kind of move on to some of our bets. Sam Ryder shoots What did he shoot? He was three over 75 on Sunday to fall out of first place. He finished T4 along with Sahith and Sungjae. Not super surprising, given how few times he had been in that position. I will say it was a little bit surprising because it felt like at late in the game, it felt like it was either Sam Ryder or Homa, because they were four clear of the field. You had Hideki, sort of. Keegan was maybe in there. Morikawa was kind of in the mix, but it really felt like Ryder and Homa, and then Ryder just completely fell off over those last three or four holes. Was there any takeaways from him?
Yeah,
after Sunday's performance,
he missed right. It's amazing when you look at what he did all day long. It was right rough. I mean, number one, he hits it into the right bunker. Number two, into the right bunker. Number four, into the right bunker. Number five, in the fairway, but on the very right side. And then on number seven, he's in the right rough. And then it happened again at 15. At 12, he hit it into the right bunker. At 14, he was the very right side of the fairway. And 15, he hits it into the right rough, isn't able to get a club on it, ends up making double. So, I mean, there's a shot that's just plaguing him out there. And I think that's a really hard thing to overcome. And it definitely caught up to him. Although I thought he did a really nice job hanging on. But eventually that little errancy got him.
Yeah. You know, Ryder's interesting because he's somebody that I was looking at his numbers on, I guess, Friday, and just for his career, he's sort of the archetype for an average PGA Tour player, right? He's like a 0.0 strokes gain guy every year, which is, you can make a great living being a 0.0 strokes gain guy, right? Yeah. But I guess my point is, you're not going to get if you're Sam Ryder, you're not going to get a ton of beating Rahm and Finau and Homa and Morikawa at Torrey type chances. You might get five or six of those in your career, unless you make a leap. You know, you could make a sort of Jimmy Walker like leap in your mid 30s. Usually it doesn't happen with guys that are kind of where Sam Ryder's at, but it's got to be difficult. We saw this with Luke Liss last year. Luke Liss actually converted for his first PGA Tour win. I think he was 37 last year. It's got to kind of weigh on you emotionally to know, like, I'm not in that class of player and I don't get a lot of chances like this. And I had three or four holes that just kind of sunk me, and I don't know when my next chance is going to be.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he's hoping it's whenever he starts next, right? That's probably what's in his head, but you're absolutely right. I mean, they showed a graphic on Friday, round three, where it was Ryder and his PGA Tour wins and everybody behind him, and everybody was over five wins, which was really cool. Homa was one of them. Morikawa was one of them, which it's amazing that they were both at five. And then I think Rahm was up there, I believe, as well. And it was like, wow, he's got some heavy hitters right here behind him. You had Hideki in the mix, and he was definitely, from a resume perspective, outclassed. But this kind of performance on Sunday could have happened to, I mean, it happened to Rahm, right?
Yep.
So no hard feelings on Sam Ryder. He's got to get that driver cleaned up a little bit.
It was definitely a Charlie Hoffman at the Masters type of situation with Sam Ryder on in the second and third round. Okay, we're going to take a look at our bets, our money ball, our one and done here in a second. But first, let's take a break and hear from our partners.
It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance Giants jogger, because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there. And I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control all desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Okay, we're back. I don't know, producer Troy. Do we have the bets pulled up? Greg and I actually didn't participate, but we are going to comment on them because we didn't participate. So we've got both matchups hit. Rick hit Scott Stallions over Harris English. Patrick hit JT over Mav McNeely. JT was kind of a made the cut, but not really a factor guy this week. Didn't get any of the finish positions. Taylor Pendrith missed out on the top 20. Johnny Vegas missed out on the top 20. The one I want to kind of jump in on is Max Homa, 22-1. That's, I think, our first outright of the year to hit.
Yeah, and it is.
Rick had Morikawa at 18, which was kind of in the mix as well. And then the other one, Patrick has an opportunity to go 2 for 2 here. Thomas Peters is... Well, okay, so the Dubai Desert Classic is still going on. Round 3, I believe, starts tonight because there was some weather earlier in the week. So I believe, yes, Thomas Peters is T1 after round 2. It says round 3 on here, but I think it's after round 2, correct?
I don't know what his official bet was. Right now, we're after they're going to be starting. Tomorrow morning, you'll see round 3.
Yeah, so Thomas Peters right now is tied with Richard Bland and Michael Thorbjørnsen. I don't know if I'm saying that right. The kid from Stanford that finished in the top 5 of the Travelers last year. He's like 19 years old. He's a superstar. Shot 64 in the second round. Anyway, Thomas Peters is tied with those two guys for the lead of the Dubai Desert Classic, but we're only through 36 holes there. So what was that? Throw that up there again, producer Troy. I think Patrick had him at 35-1. So if he goes Homa at 22 and Peters at 35 and both those guys hit, that would be a big boy week for good old Patrick.
That is, it already is. I mean, that's a huge, that's a very, very nice week, especially looking at what has happened here so far this year. So nice improvement. I love the Homa play. I loved it. It was one of my top choices as well. So good on you, Patrick.
Yep. We can go on to the money ball. Neither of those hit. Rick had, this one's tough. Rick had Hideki Matsuyama as top Asian, somehow lost out on that, even though Hideki was in second place with like 8 holes to go in this golf tournament.
Sungjae gets him by a shot.
Yeah. At the very end.
Brutal. I mean, Sungjae probably should have made that birdie putt on 18, but Hideki looked so good.
Well, Hideki made 3 bogeys on the back and made a 6 on 18 for Rick to lose this bet. So that's a tough scene. And then the John Rahm outright, I don't like that at plus 450, although he was in it and just shot 74 on Sunday. So
winners are just, it can't be a best bet. I just don't think an outright can be the most likely bet to hit.
Yeah, that's difficult. Okay, let's move on to actually, we're going to take another break here from our partners, then we'll move on to close things out with the one and done.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby Antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil. The final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Okay, we're back. One and Done was, I think, really interesting this week, Greg, because we had a lot of guys that were picked that were in it. So we'll start at the bottom. And actually, we had a comment from this gentleman earlier in the chat, if producer Troy can go find it. There we go. So Sia Najad. I mean, we've only had what, 4 weeks here, Greg, and we've had two controversies already.
So yeah.
I was not on the podcast on, neither of us were on the podcast on Tuesday. I was at the PGA show. You were doing your thing. Apparently Sia Najad did not get a pick in, and now he's saying my first cut one and done pick was made on Tuesday. It was Jason Day, and lawsuits will be filed if it's not counted.
Wow. Well, I'm worried about the lawsuits.
Where do we go from here?
I thought we were pretty clear. I don't know what time he did it, but I think we even mentioned it on Monday. We'll have to check the tapes. I'm sure this will come up in discovery. But I think we talked about how you get your pick in by Monday. Maybe that was Sunday. Now I'm having second thoughts. I don't know. I feel for you, Sia. But
okay, what so Sia, process Sia, is that? Yeah, here we go. Sia is now saying that the pick was made around noon because he didn't like the 8 a.m. deadline.
Wow. So I mean, there's a couple. Was this civil disobedience or what?
Well, there's a couple holes on my course that I don't like as par fours. So could I just get to play them as par fives?
I guess you can if you want.
I mean, that's kind of what Sia did, right?
Yeah. I'm just going to do whatever I think is what we should do. And
now, the flip side of this is that Mark kind of did what he wanted earlier in the year by turning in ROM after the deadline. So
what, does everybody get a mulligan?
Well, I was going to say, is there like a January grace period for this stuff?
That's an option. You could give it till January, but there's got to be a line drawn somewhere. If we want to help Sia out and throw him into the mix with Jason Day, man.
Producer Troy, do you have a statement here? I mean, anything you say can and will be held against you, but do you have anything to say about this situation?
I mean, the one thing that I could say is that on the Monday podcast, we did say it was due by 8 a.m.
It was Monday. Okay. So, all right.
That's it.
I think it's settled at that point. There's a due date established. He's on. I know he's not always on Sunday. He's not often on Sundays. He's always on Mondays. And we talked about it Monday.
But we've also talked about how you can't change your pick after the Tuesday podcast, and yet we let Mark get away with changing his pick.
Right.
Yeah. So yep.
Here's my thing. I am pro January grace period. I don't think that Sia was nefariously studying the First Cut podcast on Tuesday morning to see who everybody else picked and then taking somebody different. Well, he didn't take anybody different. He took the same guy that the rest of us picked on Tuesday. So I say, let him have it, give him the money, and that's it. Starting February, everybody has to abide. We need the rule book turned in February 1 so that everybody knows what we're dealing with.
So this is the last straw.
This is it.
Right? Because it's January 28th. So are we going to have a Tuesday pod? Are we going to have one more? What is next week? Is next week, are we still in the grace period here?
I think next week is still the grace period. You start Phoenix elevated, no grace period. Listen, it wouldn't be a Tory week if we weren't having some kind of scandal involving the Farmers Insurance Open. So
we need it every year.
Give Sia the, okay. You don't need to be, we're trying to help you out here, Sia. Don't get out over your skis there, buddy. Give Sia the money. I don't know how much, what did Jason Day earn? What was, I don't have
282,000.
Okay. So 282,000 to Sia. Are you good with that, Greg?
Yeah, I'm good with it.
Okay.
Rick texted me. He's good with it. So,
okay. All right. Great. Give it to Sia. Mark also got 282,000. I did as well. The fans did as well. Greg, you did as well.
Yep.
The real story here, Patrick had himself a week. Patrick and Rick both had Max Homa. So they jump up into the seven figure club. They're both over a million now. And actually Patrick's over 2 million. So we've got a leaderboard starting to take shape as we head into the elevated portion of the schedule.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Still a huge gap. I mean, these next couple, the elevated events, designated events are going to be enormous. And you can already see from this leaderboard why. And I was so in favor of Max Homa and Jason Day this week. And I went with Day because I felt like Homa was a guy I could use in an elevated event. And I didn't know if Day would have a better week than this.
I agree.
And so I am very happy for their win. On HQ this week, I had Homa as my winner besides Rom, and I had Day as my top 10 lock. And so I loved both of these guys. I think Homa's going to win a designated event. I mean, is he a better play here or a better play at Riv?
Well, I guess that was going to be my question is where I wouldn't have picked Homa this week. I didn't love him at Torrey, but I do think he's very pickable for the elevated events. I just don't know which one. Is it Quail Hollow? Is it Riv? Is it Phoenix? Is it a playoff event? It's probably not a major. And so that leaves you with what, six or seven options? Is it the Players? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know which one to
could throw it be him a major? There for. There's a lot. But if you look at Jason Day, on the contrary, I don't think he's a playable option in any of those.
No, I agree.
If he is, you probably haven't done a great job with your planning.
Yeah. I think I'm going to pencil in Morikawa for the US Open, by the way, already. I think I'm just going to pay Morikawa for LACC.
I like it. I mean, I want to do a little more learning about it, see what it's about a little more as we get closer.
Yeah.
But I get it.
Okay. Refreshed season standings for the one and done. Mark at the top with 3.1. I'm in second with just under 3. And then we've got Patrick with just over 2. So those are your top three going into Pebble Week. Kind of a weird, you know, this next week, Greg, it's interesting because we're taping this on a Saturday night. We've got 2 days now of kind of shifting our focus to Dubai to watch the hopefully final pairing of Rory and Reed on Sunday evening, Monday morning. And then we're into a week at Pebble that's just, you know, not the most anticipated event of the year. But then you get Phoenix, Riv, Bay Hill, Players, basically in a 6-week stretch. So
yeah,
it's kind of a deep breath before a pretty elite run of golf this year.
Yeah, but it's still a great event, and it's in a great spot in the schedule. There's no football to compete with on next Sunday. And over the past couple of years, even with weaker fields, we've had great finishes. And I expect the same out of the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, but it'll just be a little taste compared to what we're going to get in the coming weeks.
Are you in on moving more of the sort of January, February events to a Wednesday through Saturday finish?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you could do it for all of them. This is phenomenal. I think.
I'm surprised that they, and I'm sure there's a reason for it. I'm surprised that we haven't done it for Phoenix. Because Phoenix, it just feels, it's a crazy week. I'm going to be out there. it's going to be awesome because that's always a fun week. The Super Bowl's in Scottsdale or in Glendale, wherever the stadium is. And it's the first, I would say the first kind of real elevated, this is like what the future of the PGA Tour is going to look like type event. But it gets a little jammed up against the Super Bowl. And I just don't know that it's, I don't know. I think it would be better served as like sort of an appetizer on Saturday night leading into Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, the good thing about it is it normally kind of brushes right up to it. And if you don't have a playoff, the timing is perfect. And So I think they have a nice thing going there where it works, but it does run into trouble if you have a playoff, which happened last year. And I think Scheffler and Cantlay went a couple of holes. So that can
it
be.
It always happens. Hideki, yeah. Finau, yeah. Webb.
Yeah, good point. So you get a lot of playoffs there, and, yeah. and you end up into Super Bowl time. I like the Sunday. I like that little rotation. I think it's a fun thing. But if you did want to move it to Saturday to get the full attention, I mean, imagine that environment on the final round. That would be insanity. It's insanity anyway. So it could be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay, that's all I got. I may or may not have a couple episodes of the Netflix show waiting for me to go watch. So I'm going to go maybe or maybe not get to that. You got anything else for us, Greg?
No, I hope you enjoy those if it is the may have.
If that's what I'm doing, I will enjoy those. Yeah, yes,
and let me know what you think for sure. But yes. I guess the last thing we should add next week, we got Monday DFS preview. Yep. Tuesday, we'll have our normal deadline, although it doesn't really apply because we're in a grace period. a mega preview pod.
This is like when the USGA makes a new rule and they give like 6 months for people to respond. Yeah. That's the grace period that we're in right
the
now.
Feedback period.
Exactly.
Feedback. So and then we'll be back with you on Sunday as well. So next week, Monday, Tuesday, Sunday, and get us right here, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. But thanks, Absolutely. Kyle. Good job filling in.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We made it without Rick. It didn't get too off the rails, Greg. You and I have a tendency to just go down rabbit holes and never come back.
It's happened before.
So we're still here. We made it through, and I'm ready for Rick to be back in this chair on Monday and Tuesday.
Yep, me too. Thanks, everybody. Okay.
Talk to y'all soon.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.